Read in God's most holy word, in the Old Testament, in the prophecy of Daniel, the 6th chapter of the book, the prophecy of Daniel. If we look at the last two verses of chapter 5, there's something to note in particular. That very night, the story of Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and it says, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. And chapter 6 begins, it pleased Darius to appoint, and so on. Now, it would appear that this Darius is regarded by most sound scholars to be the same person as Cyrus, who sent the Jews back to Babylon. So keep that in mind. It pleased Darius, or Cyrus, if you like to put his name in there, to appoint 120 satraps, that is, provincial governors, to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. That's after, of course, he'd interpreted the writing on the wall for Belshazzar. The satraps were made accountable to them, to the three administrators, so that the king might not suffer loss. Now, Daniel was so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom next to himself, as I suppose you would say prime minister. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with his religion, the law of his God." So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, or Cyrus, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius, or Cyrus, put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem, looking to the west, due west. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went, and that's an interesting phrase, asking God for help, in view of what we read. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays 3 times a day. When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, "Remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, that must have been before they had did so, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, God's sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and their children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius or Cyrus. And that little word "and," which I suppose most of you have here, according to the Hebrew, might read, "So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius or Cyrus, even," or as you may have, if you have the New International Version of the Scriptures, the footnote, that is, the reign of Darius or Cyrus, that is the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Amen. May God bless to us his holy word. Daniel, the Old Testament, Daniel chapter 6. As I said during the reading of the last verse of chapter 5, last Sunday morning, must have seemed to contradict my insistence during the sermon then that it was Cyrus who conquered Babylon the night that Belshazzar was slain, not Darius the Mede. But a small army of evangelical Old Testament scholars have given a great deal of thought to this seeming contradiction. And with a weight of scholarship which is impressive, they have come to the conclusion that Darius the Mede is the same person as Cyrus. And the words don't sound so very different when you say them. Who, Cyrus, who you remember in the year Belshazzar died, which was Cyrus's first year. We read that in Ezra 1 and 1. Cyrus sent the Jews back home to Jerusalem. But not Daniel. He didn't return to Jerusalem. After the writing on the wall, Daniel was reinstated, not only immediately by Belshazzar before he died that night, but by Cyrus, or Darius, if you like to call him that, but I will call him Cyrus. Daniel was reinstated to the extent that he was appointed one of the three administrators of the entire empire, and then the head of the whole empire as prime minister, like Joseph in Egypt. Wonderful, wonderful. But of course everyone didn't like that appointment. We must remember that Daniel, by now an old man, of course, had outstripped the wise men of Babylon, not only at first when he refused, chapter 1, you remember, when he refused the king's food, but also twice after that when he interpreted the king's dreams in chapters 2 and 4. Indeed, it may have been these very magi, these astrologers, magicians, if you like to call them that, more than Belshazzar himself, who had seen to the eclipse of Daniel after Nebuchadnezzar's death. And if so, it would have been because Daniel surpassed them all in discernment and wisdom and in ability. When this high office was given him, naturally a whole host of people would have been envious, and who doubtless determined that they would do their best to queer the pitch of this old Jew, if they could. And we know, of course, who was behind that. As was behind the attempted, you remember, the attempted extermination of the Jews in the Persian Empire 50 years later, as recorded in the book of Esther. Who but the old devil was behind all that? You see, may I say this again? I have often characterized the meaning of the Old Testament in one sentence, that it is there to show the devil's attempt to prevent Jesus, Messiah, coming. The whole story shows the enemies, the devil's attempts to destroy Israel so that Messiah should not come. And so this is undoubtedly part of that, Esther and this of Daniel. But these adversaries of Daniel didn't reckon with Daniel's God. Although Nebuchadnezzar had done, you remember, after his sanity was restored. And that's a wonderful chapter, chapter 4. Indeed, do you recall, so moved had Nebuchadnezzar been when his sanity was restored at how God had humbled him and then recovered him, when he acknowledged the Almighty, that Nebuchadnezzar in that, at the end of chapter 4, don't know that we made comment on that when we did looked at chapter 4, but Nebuchadnezzar was so enamored of what God had done for him that he seemed to forget to honor Daniel at the end of that chapter. He was so completely enamored of the power of Daniel's God that he gave all the glory to him. But now that Daniel was once again in the ascendant, in the kingdom, but under, of course, different auspices now, he would have to pay for his high office, as prime ministers do, don't they, in terms of human jealousy. The other two administrators and the satraps, provincial governors, began to plot how they could embarrass Daniel and have him unseated and even destroyed if they could. But they could find no fault in him. I'm sure they would have tried very, very hard. No fault which would have stood up to examination, and the only hope of harming him was in respect of his religion. If there was anything in his religion and its practice which would put him in bad odor with the king and royalty, that might work. Ah, but it would have to be done very subtly. But you see, while these so-called magicians were not very clever at discerning visions and significant events, they were past masters at devising shady and crooked devices to undermine an adversary's position, such as that of Daniel. So this is what they came up with. And the speciousness and the plausibility of which is so puerile, so childish, that if we're not absolutely haywire as to our understanding of the life of that these people lived in Babylon so long ago, you would think a little child would have seen through their rickety stratagem. It is pathetic, isn't it? For one thing, the decree they devised was for such a short period. And any king in his senses would have asked, why this particular period, 30 days? But you see, as I assume, if the king was constantly signing documents and simply adding his signature without necessarily reading what he had signed, and if so, it shows how naively trusting he was in a world of sustained and studied corruption. But if the king was constantly signing documents, he might have very well passed the decree which endangered Daniel, either without reading it or without realizing what he was doing. Besides, it would have flattered the king's vanity that it was a unanimous, almost unanimous request. Not quite. One was missing. If the king had but known it when the decree was determined. But Daniel apart, the rest were all in favor, the devil having doubtless seen to it that all the others, being Satan's proteges, were marshaled to do his devilish bidding. It was the most curious get-up you ever heard of. Anyone who prayed to any god or man during 30 days except to the king would be thrown to the lions. But how could such a universal rule be enforced? They would have needed policemen in every home. But they were only concerned with one home, weren't they? Daniel's. And why only 30 days? Well, it was designed for nothing else but to trap that man Daniel, which they must have thought would be easy. In fact, it is such a barefaced attempt to discredit and destroy Daniel that anyone in his senses would have seen through it, which makes me so sure that the king passed the thing without having the slightest knowledge of what he was doing, except that for 30 days he was to be the only god and counselor of men in the kingdom. Can you laugh? I think it's a laughing matter, although it's a series in a sense for Daniel. The childishness of it. But of course, it was according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be altered, at least not for 30 days. Do you know, not a soul that I can find commenting on Daniel mentions the fact that unalterable as the law of the Medes and Persians was supposed to be, it was only unalterable for its duration, 30 days. Why that short period? Well, these wicked rascals knew that as far as Daniel was concerned, his faithfulness to his God was such that they would have been able to catch him the very first morning or afternoon or evening, whatever time they caught him at his worship, facing Jerusalem, practically due west. And of course they hadn't long to wait. And since I am inclined to believe, and this we were discussing with the children, I deeply appreciate their opinions, their wisdom. I believe Daniel, being made aware of the decree, knew that the decree was from the enemy of his God. He simply refused to let it affect him in the slightest. I could imagine him thinking, "This is a matter for you, O Lord, not me. I'll go on as I always do, and I'll leave the whole issue with you, even if it means the lion's pit." And of course it did mean the lion's pit, didn't it? And when you think of it, oh God, God, you do choose the hard way for your servants sometimes, don't you? As you did with your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. He had to go the hard way. So with so many of your junior sons and daughters. So into the lion's den he went. Now, of course, the story is too familiar for us even to outline it. We know it so well. But the king's expressed wish to Daniel before he was cast into the den, that shows that the king knew what an error he had made in signing that decree. And so, as Daniel was about to be thrown to the lions, the king said to him, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." What? Rescue you from my decree? Did you ever hear such a contradiction of an unalterable decree? which the king had just signed? Poor king, poor king. What a night he had, tossing and turning, and agonizingly deploring that he had ever signed that decree. But of course, there were decrees and dispositions signed every day in that palace, I suppose, that would summarily end the life of some supposed renegade or other. Why bother about this man Daniel? Ah, the king knew that he was special, and it was his conscience which tormented him and made him determine that at first light of dawn he would be down there frantically crying to Daniel, "Oh, Daniel, are you still alive down there amongst those wild beasts?" You see, the record is plain about the king's distress. And don't you think he was more than furious with these wicked men who had plotted and planned the destruction of this godly man? Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able? Notice the word, able to rescue you from the lions? And Daniel replied, "Been able, king? Been able? What do you mean?" Daniel's voice sounded loud and clear from the depth of the pit. "What do you mean, Abel? He can do all things. My God." And so it was a light and easy thing for him to shut a few lions' mouths, and even choose, as I was suggesting earlier, if he took it into his head to make these beasts so docile as pussycats, so that Daniel could have gone up and stroked them and made them purr with a loud, growling purr of satisfaction. Other lions have been tamed that we've known. Elsa, you remember, in Kenya. You've not forgotten the Lord's word of prophecy through Isaiah 11:6-9, about the day when a whole menagerie of wild and tame beasts will form a grand procession, like St. Song's Carnival of the Animals, if you know that wonderful musical work, making its royal way towards the New Jerusalem, with a little child leading them, maybe with a deadly snake harmlessly draped round its neck. That's the prophecy. God can do what he likes with his own, man or beast, or angel, or devil. I wonder, you know, if Daniel slept the sleep of the just in that den that night. What do you think? I could believe it. While the king was harrowed to the depths of his tortured soul with his troubled conscience. You know, the scholars help us so little sometimes. Not a soul seems to connect this with Cyrus's desire to send the Jews back to Jerusalem. What do you think of that? I know, of course, that it was this comparatively benign man, Cyrus's desire to send all the captive peoples he found in Babylon and the empire back to their own homelands. That was a wonderfully magnanimous thing to do, and he did. Provided, of course, they remained under imperial control. Don't forget that. There was no slackening of that. But submit to him as emperor, and you go back home to your own home. That was very wise, very sensible. How God put that into Cyrus's heart and mind is wonderful. Well, of course, it was under his governance. Compare the precautions we read of and have read of recently in Ezra and Nehemiah to preserve sovereign control of Judah when the Jews returned, as well as control of all other conquered territories, which, by the way, during Cyrus's reign stretched, his empire stretched from half across the North African seaboard, right to Egypt, right through the Middle East, right through to the borders of India. What an empire! From half across Africa, right to India. But you see, it was nonetheless an act of God's mercy that the Lord put it into the heart and mind of Cyrus to send the Jews back. And since these events both took place in the same year, is it too much to suppose, as I'm doing now, is it too much to suppose that these two events, Daniel being delivered from the lions by God's power, and Cyrus sending the Jews back, is it too much to think that these two were spiritually connected? That although the king would never spare Daniel from his kingdom to return to Jerusalem, others would be allowed to do that, like Zerubbabel, Joshua, Ezra, Nehemiah, with all the other Jews who wanted to go home, who wanted to go back to their homeland. As, would you like to turn this up, some of you? As 2 Chronicles 36 and 23 says, and Ezra 1 to 4. Now, this is very interesting. I read the last two verses in the second book of Chronicles. This is what Cyrus, king of Persia, says. The Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build a temple for him at Jerusalem in Judah. Any one of his people among you, may the Lord his God be with him, and let him go up. Now read the first four verses of Ezra. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken by Jeremiah before the Jews went to Babylon, the Lord moved the heart of Cyrus, king of Persia, to make a proclamation throughout his realm and to put it in writing. This is what Cyrus, king of Persia, says. The Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build a temple for him at Jerusalem and Judah. That's the most amazing thing. Any one of his people among you, anyone, may his God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem in Judah and build the temple of the Lord, the God of Israel, the God who is in Jerusalem. And the people of any place where survivors may now be living are to provide him with silver and gold, with goods and livestock, and with freewill offerings for the temple of God in Jerusalem. Who caused the man to do that? Nobody but the Lord. Ah, but there's another side to all that magnanimity, of course. Fierce love begets fierce hate of that which opposes what we love. They belong together, don't they? Don't they? The completeness of the king's fury with these administrators is clear from their appalling destruction in the pit of these enraged beasts. Men, women, and children. How terrible! How terrible! But you see, God allowed that too. For he is not to be mocked. And the suffering of his servants in the exercise of their devotion to their God, he does not and cannot despise, ever. And look again at the ending of our chapter. Look at the ending of chapter 6 of Daniel. I read from verse 25. Then the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land. May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, that's from the middle of Africa to India, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. What a thing for a pagan king to do. Fancy getting God's enemies to proclaim his gospel. Oh, what a... Dare I use the word clever of our God? It's too poor a word for him. His wisdom. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of the king, even the reign, as I believe it you'd read, of Cyrus the Persian. You remember what the three Hebrew friends of Daniel said before they were cast into the burning fiery furnace? This is what they said, chapter 3, verse 16b. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. But now, there's no word in chapter 6 of Daniel saying, or perhaps even thinking any such thing as, even if he does not rescue us from our hand. And Sam said that he thought maybe God had told Daniel beforehand. I think that's right. He didn't need to put that in. When we know that the dreadful things which threaten to engulf us, that is to say, if we do not capitulate to wicked tyranny, are from the enemy, we know that our God, who is greater than any of the devil's devisings, must rescue his own. Especially his own, for whom he has further purposes on earth. That's why we're preserved. You know, we mustn't be slow to thank God for preserving Willie Leslie nearly 40 years after he might have died. That's God's provision for this place. And it applies to others here too. My last words are this. We are immortal until our work is done. Isn't that great? 527. 527, a short hymn. God is my strong salvation, what foe have I to fear?